Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
Awesome. So we are live. So welcome to A Coffee with Karen, a cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo. So each week, my guests tend to be around the holistic health arena, whether they're coaches, healers of some kind or other, and whether they're helping people on the mental, the physical, or the spiritual perspective, or what tends to be the case is sort of any combination of those three. So I'm your host, Karen Roberts. Although I come from a very physical background in the fitness industry, nutrition, then into healing. But again, the physical side, not so much the woo-woo. And now we're sort of, tend to be moving towards that side. And generally now I'm helping other healers and coaches actually build their business online without being a salesy weirdo, I suppose. So my guest this week, I'm really excited. She's from across the pond, so over not far from Washington, D.C. So Dr. Liz, well, what would you like to share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Dr. Liz Dubois. I do, like you said, live about an hour outside of D.C. I live in a small island in the Chesapeake Bay, which is a large body of water right before you hit the Atlantic Ocean. So I live in a tiny little town on Kent Island, and it's just the best place in the world. I every morning get to drive my car just about 4 minutes from my house and go have coffee with the universe and just sit under a tree and watch big ships come in from China and all over the world and bring us, you know, the goodies that come from all over, and just commune with all that is for a bit.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. So what I do, I'm an executive coach and professional development coach. So I work with people who are extremely driven, extremely bright, who are on the precipice of moving into being like the next iteration of who they are professionally, but feel like they need someone to either walk alongside them or kind of flick them over the cliff. So they know that they're right at the precipice of like, oh my gosh, I can feel that this is really ready to take off, but I'm feeling just like, I don't know how to quite put the puzzle pieces together. And so to give a tangible example of that, I have a client that just came back to me who's, my goodness, my heart just loves him so much. And we worked together last year for about 9 months. And he said, you know, as a result of the work that we'd done together, I've gone from being kind of the top dog salesperson and really just like killing it. He's been able to do things in sales for 4 years that no one's ever done, not wow, just his company, but in the sector. And they gave him half the company.
Well, that worked.
That's what he said. You know, he said like, as a result of the, you know, obviously his hard work, right? But the work that he did well in the containers with me, got to a place where there was just no denying that he was the person that was going to take this company to the next level. Right. And now he came back to me and said, like, if that's how far I was able to go this time, oh my gosh, like Katie, bar the door, because we're going to go further. So unlike a lot of coaches who are really kind of like, well, you're stuck and we're going to move, you know, like we're really going to dig in and look at your blocks and, you know, get you unstuck and moving. My people are not stuck. They are running 40 miles an hour and they're ready to run 100 miles an hour. And I get them away from this internalized belief that you have to achieve in order to be good enough, right? I say for a lot of my people, achievement is their love language, right? They're like, if I cross the next hurdle, that means I'm good enough, right?
Yeah.
So we disconnect their kind of feelings of self-worth from whether or not they're doing well in their profession, right? And when we can kind of disconnect those things, they're no longer on, I call it the hamster wheel of, am I good enough, right? Where they're like, right, looking for the next thing that's going to be an opportunity for them to prove to themselves that they're worthy, that they're good. So we disconnect those things, we ground them into feeling good about who they are, and then they can achieve anything they want.
Wow, fantastic. And I mean, what would you say then was, especially with this guy's already doing incredibly well, already, you know, smashing it with the sales, what was that one thing then that was holding him back from going to that next level? Is it just all up here? I mean, I'm sure there's different strategies, right? Yeah. To take somebody from zero to five figures, from five to six, from six, you know, there's going to be different processes, but it sounds like from what you're sharing just there, that actually it's the mental blocks, right?
Yeah, I don't actually like the word blocks at all. I think it creates a false paradigm, which is in order for me to get what I want, I have to remove some sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and sure.
In reality, there's stories, right? There's stories that we're telling ourselves, and their nervous system level responses to different forms of trauma, different forms of patterns of behavior. But what I get very frustrated about in the spiritual community is this idea of blocks, right? We're like,
right,
a block, and I can't make money until I do this. And it's like, well, you have stories, and you have cultural upbringing, and you have trauma, but that can coexist with making a tremendous amount of money, right?
Yeah.
Having a tremendous impact, but we tell ourselves a story that I can't have both of these things, right? And that's not true. I don't want to go too much into the way that we shifted for him, mm-hmm. Because it's his story, right? But it was deeply personal work. You know, it was around childhood. It was about, expectations that were placed upon him as a young person, the dynamics that he grew up in, the things that he felt like he was expected to do in order to be good enough in the eyes of his family. And he created space for the beliefs and the kind of paradigms that he was raised with to coincide with him doing things his way, did not invalidate the love that he was offered from his family and the way that they were able to express it. So when we disconnected this idea of, in order for me to make my family happy, I have to do things their way, right? In order for me to be respectful, I have to do things the way that I think they would have wanted them done. When we were able to say, these people are we give them permission to exist for who they are, and we give ourselves permission to exist for who we are, and those two things don't have to be in conflict.
Mm, love that. Love. I mean, isn't it interesting that it's all based around, I mean, you say it's just all about the stories that we are just making up. I mean, it's just all make-believe. But it's been going, I suppose it's been going for so long. And, you know, and I totally understand where you're coming from there, saying that, you know, block. Yeah, I haven't thought of it from that point of view, that actually it's quite a negative connotation there. But it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, the reason quite often the people that feel, because it's only a perception, that they are stuck in some way due to these, I suppose it's, yeah, unless we have made a conscious decision to change that story, we're on autopilot, right? We're just repeating those stories day in, day out. And you said something really interesting earlier about the whole fact that actually this can change our whole, almost the whole biology and our whole reaction to things.
Yeah. I want to talk about the biology, actually, if we can. Is that all
yeah,
right?
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely. Okay.
Cool. So I think like there's a spectrum, right? Or a pendulum perhaps, right? Like in here is the way that I respond to life is in alignment with the things that I am trying to attract, right? I want to be healthy. I want to have a lot of money. I want to have love that's very healthy. I want to have a good relationship with my children, right? And so I'm going to behave in such a way that those things can come to me, right? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when we are seeking methodologies that will allow us to go from being up here, I'm not enough, right, to get us kind of into this neutrality, we can say the methodology or the I guess the paradigm, right, the healing paradigm, is that there are blocks for me to get down here. There's some sort of thing, right, down here. When we say, you know, it's just stories and we're just making it up, we kind of come back up here, which is we gaslight ourselves and say, well, I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe that I just have this story, right? I can't just like, this is ridiculous. And when we do that, we don't hold space for the parts of ourselves that we're really indoctrinated with these beliefs, right? And so let's talk about the biology for a second. Stories don't arise from nowhere, right? These are not just things that we come into contact with because we're stupid or toxic, or we read a book, right? Like they're coming from socialized norms, right? And they're coming from the experiences that we have as children, which is why inner child work is a huge component of what I do with my clients. So when you pop out of your mommy, right? You are biologically wired to behave in a way that elicits a response from your caregiver, right? That is how we are wired. Because if we didn't do that from day one, like we would be abandoned in the woods and eaten by saber-toothed tigers, right? So as infants, like right from day one, our neural circuitry is programmed in such a way that we adapt our behavior to elicit a response from our caregiver, right? By 6 months old, we know the kind of cry that is going to get us a bottle. We know the kind of cry that is going to get us changed. We know the kind of cry that means that mommy's going to get up at 4 a.m. and rock us back to sleep, right? And so we are natural born adapters, right? But if your caregivers aren't emotionally or physically available, the behavior that you have to do in order to elicit those responses is more extreme, right? And so we go from being people, even little baby people, who are able to express a need and have it met, to be people who manipulate having a response, right, elicited. And the tactics by which we manipulate, right, which is a negative connotation word, but I'm using it here because it means to bend ourselves in different ways to some extent. So that other people will match us in kind. When we have a parent who's emotionally available, right? We have basic human need for comfort and love and warmth, right? Those studies where monkeys had like the wire mommy with the food and the sock mommy with the love, right? The monkey will go get the food and then go back to the comforting mommy because love is wired into who we are. So if you cannot get love from your caregiver because they're emotionally unavailable or they're using drugs and alcohol or they're working 79 hours a week and they never come home, and right? The way that we will behave to elicit love is not necessarily healthy, right?
Yeah. But you can see how naturally.
Yeah. It's a biological feature. So it's not that, oh, I'm creating a story because I have a limiting belief, because I have a block, because in a past life I was burned at the stake, because like, you know, and I'm not invalidating the truth of any of those things. But what I'm saying is when we downplay or ignore the fact that there are biological components at play here, we distance ourselves from the ability to be effective as coaches and healers.
Absolutely. You know, they're all real things. And you can, when you step back for a moment and think about that, it is an absolute human, and we're all human. It's a natural response to those things. Totally.
Even monkeys do it, right? Deep down inside, we are all cute baby monkeys. And when we give space for that, right? When we give space for that and we allow ourselves to say, I'm not bad and broken here. I'm just a primate, right? Having a primitive response in this moment. How do I rewire my circuitry and adjust my behavior in such a way that my neural circuitry is no longer keeping me from what I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So it is, you know, obviously step one is being aware of this. And I suppose, again, you said something fairly important about the, you know, it is, if we sort of belittle the stories or like you said, oh, you know, it's just a story you're telling, you know, stop doing that. Yeah, okay. Consciously, we would want to stop. None of us do this deliberately, right? Mm-hmm. Do we? None of us want to self-sabotage, whereas mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of us, myself included, can do it in certain situations with certain particular subjects, right? Because again, I'm sure that, you know, that's what we do until we are aware. And a lot of people just aren't. They don't know that that's what they're doing. They don't even know that they need to do some inner child healing, where mm-hmm. I'm sure every single person on the planet would benefit from some inner child healing, because we're all going to have stuff, right?
Yeah.
Have you met anybody that hasn't needed it?
No, it's funny. I had a new friend over. Yeah, I'm relatively new to where I live, and I had a new friend over last night, and he's a serial entrepreneur as well. I've owned companies on and off since I was 24. And we were just hanging out, and he said, you know, growing up, I was called perfect, right? Like that was the name slung at him in high school, is like, a pretty boy, you're perfect. You know, and he had stuff, right? Like, he had stuff. We all have stuff. It doesn't matter.
We all are, isn't it? And I think that's what is so important for people to understand, like, relax, man. It's nothing to be, you know, there's nothing bad. We're all going to have it, and give yourselves a break. You know, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I want to kind of stick something in here for practitioners, right? So I see a heavy trend, heavy bend. I don't know how I would call it. I see a large contingent of spiritual entrepreneurs who coach other entrepreneurs and are healers and coach people and blah, 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 blah. I see a lot of us get into this space where everything's about some sort of broken, hurting part of us. And I'm going through a situation in my life right now. And, you know, one of my friends who's a spiritual entrepreneur and business coach, she was like, oh, it's because, like, pursuing this thing that you can't have is your crack, right? Because you grew up having unavailable people in your life. And so this is the thing that you want, right? Because it's unavailable, and like, it's just replicating this dynamic. And the other person involved in this situation was like, I don't know that that's the case. And then my therapist was like, I don't know if that's the case. And yesterday I had the privilege of spending a whole day with another coach who's been one of my friends for 10 years since grad school, who knows me really, really well. She's not a spiritual entrepreneur. She's a straight edge coach, right? and very good at it, right? Very, very good at it. Runs an international company. She is the fucking shit. And I like kind of laid out everything that's going on. And I was like, it's because I have daddy issues, right? Because like, this is like a pattern I'm replicating. And she was like, what? No. that is not what is happening here, like, at all. Like, you want a thing and you can't have it, and you're grieving that, and like, you get to like have your feelings without it being an indicator of being fucked up. And so I think two things. One, that framework of like, you're being a human, having a human response, was much more empowering than I have all this work to go do because this is replicating a pattern from childhood because my blah, 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 right? And so all of a sudden I had a space of empowerment to say, I'm just feeling I'm just feeling feelings, not I'm feeling inappropriate feelings that are based in a trauma pattern.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just want to point out kind of the key takeaways here. One, if you are untrained, that does not mean you shouldn't be a coach. And there's a reason why training is important too, right? So it's not that you don't know things and it's not that you can't help people, but grounding that in a deep sense of humility and scope, I think is really important, right? And and the kind of situation where I was able to lay this out, right? And have someone with a tremendous amount of clinical training be like, and then another person with a tremendous amount of graduate program clinical training be like, I think there was just a different grounded perspective there. And that's not to say that you have to go to graduate school in order to be a coach. You don't. It is to say, be very careful about getting out over your skis, right?
Yeah.
If you grew up with patterns of behavior that left you feeling very uncomfortable about some of the ways that you interact with the world, you go to a therapist, you don't put that on somebody else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see that? Do you think there is this pattern? And I think I don't know whether I've noticed it or whether it's just because I'm dealing with these people a lot or, you know, coming into contact with these people or not. And I get it that naturally, if somebody has overcome some kind of issue, then their natural desire will want to be able to go and then help others. But I see the problem there is that they can actually be putting their stuff onto. And like you say, that's not the issue. They're just having a one of those days, man. It's not that deep. So there's a line, isn't there? So, and maybe there is a trend that everyone's going a little bit too far to one way, which I suppose naturally happens throughout this because, you know, one minute we're just focusing on strategies, processes, you know, the to-do things. And now we've moved into this arena of, you know, the whole healing inner work kind of thing. And maybe there needs to be some middle ground. Is that sort of?
I don't know if I believe that there needs to be some middle ground because so I offer two different tracks of work. You can work with me on professional development, which is kind of for like mid-career professionals, earlier in the career professionals who are entrepreneurs making less than six figures, people who are in kind of the first 10 years of their career, people that are going through a career change. And then there's executive coaching, which is for people who are, you know, as the name might suggest, executives, right? they're running larger companies, right? The client that I reference, you know, he's not running a six figure, he's not running a seven figure, he's running an eight figure company, right? Or controlling stake in this. So what I find with both of these groups of people, these are superhuman humans, right? Just like some of these people are going to jump into executive management at some point. They're just amazing. The work that we do has much less to do with strategy and much more to do with healing.
Right.
But I have a PhD in 12 years of training. That's like not to throw shade on people at all. It is to say, approach your methodology with a tremendous amount of humility and scope, right? When people talk about me, and my work, they often say, well, Dr. Liz is a psychologist. I'm not. I have a PhD in conflict analysis and resolution. And what I do is I analyze conflicts and we resolve them, right? And I have training in trauma-informed methodologies from certification programs and from the work that I did in grad school. And so I do trauma-informed conflict analysis and resolution, right?
Right.
When people need things outside of that box, I refer them out. Right. So I think there's a couple of things that can be helpful. One is be humble enough to stay in your lane. Right. If you know that you are a tremendously powerful Akashic Records healer, right, work in the Akashic Records and help people process the information that comes through. Right. Do not move into a space of, well, I see that you're struggling with IVF. Right. And that means that we need to go shift this stuff in your womb space, blah, blah, blah. Maybe you do need to do that, but also you need to be working with a doctor, right? And what we see, kind of this like spiritual gaslighting where people are like, well, you didn't ground deeply enough into your manifestation processes and you didn't heal this past life trauma in which a baby was taken away from you because you were a witch and that's why you can't get pregnant. It's like there's space for both of these things, right?
Yeah, sure.
So yeah. I think number one is be humble enough to stay in your lane. And that's not to say don't expand your skill set. Go get more training, go do more mentorship, blah, 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 blah. But be aware of what you are an expert in and what you are not. Two, have a peanut gallery, right? No, have a board of directors. Let's call it that. I have a number of people from different sectors, right? Different industries, lots of coaches. I have three coaches that I lean on, but I have people across many sectors and lots of them, right? I'm talking like nine people all together who I call for input, right? I'm like, hey, I personally am stuck right here and this is what's going on. Can you help me pull this apart, right? And then I call three other people and do the same thing. And I kind of sort out these things feel true. These things don't resonate. With this information, this is how I'm going to behave, right?
Brilliant.
And same thing, if I have a client stuck in some way, I call people too, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm good at my job, but that doesn't mean that I'm not insular, right?
Yeah. So that is the thing, is not, you know, thinking that, you know, we don't all know it all.
There's a coach needs a coach. Yeah, and there's a joke, you know, that runs in academic circles where it's like, if you talk to someone with a PhD at a cocktail party and you ask them about anything outside, you know, like, oh, you know, how's sports going? They're like, that's not really the scope of my research. And so I'm not really comfortable to speaking to that as authority. It's like the more training you get, the more clear you are on the fact that you don't know anything.
Yeah. And it's okay.
Not only is it okay, it's really healthy, right? Like I make the joke often with people. It's not a joke, really. Like I make the joke often with people that I don't, like I'm good at like four things and that's it, right? Like I'm a good friend. I'm a good coach. I'm a good mom and I'm a good communicator. And outside of, well, I'm good at sex too, but
that's another story.
I don't kick that out in a discovery call. Discovery call, right? But those four, when I'm like, I'm only really good at four things, people are like, oh my gosh, you're so talented. And I'm like, but I'm not. And I don't try to be because I don't care, right?
You don't need to be, you know, like you say, stay in your lane. You know, we don't have to be, you know, everything to everybody. And you know, all the old quotes come in, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. Just focus on what you do. Yeah, love this. So for the listeners out here there.
Yeah.
So specifically, so you've said that you cover sort of two main areas there, but can you sort of elaborate a little bit more on how you help? You did say that you help entrepreneurs sort of who are, you know, anywhere up to the sort of six figure mark. So what is it that you do and how do you help them?
Yeah. Okay. I want to kind of tie up a loose end here about like stay in your lane. What I want listeners to take away from this is not you don't know anything and don't outpace your skill set. And don't grow and you don't have authority to say anything. What I do want people to take away from it is for me to be of highest service, I need to dig into the skill set that I am the most grounded in. And I need to have a deep sense of self-worth. So I don't need to get into a place of trying to prove to someone, right? Even if it's on a subconscious level, prove to someone that like, I'm a good coach, right? Like I can help you with this and I can help you with this and I can help, like, there are things I cannot help you do, you know, and I refer out often, right? And so I think it comes down to self-worth of knowing that you don't have to be everything to everyone, sales confidence, believing that people will work with you, even if you don't have the every skill set under the sun, right? Mm-hmm. So that's confidence, worthiness, and humility to be able to say, you know, I don't actually think I'm the right fit for you. And then the financial wherewithal to have a little bit of a cash stash on standby. If someone pays you in full and three sessions in, you're like, I'm not getting traction, and it's because you're not a good fit. You got to refund that person, right?
Yeah.
And I've done that. I've done that twice, three times. And the quality of my work and the revenue that I bring in increases every time I do that, because for every person that's not a great fit, there's so many others that are. And so the emotional bandwidth that I'm putting into helping this one person, right, is like a million times more than a client who's a good fit for me. And so when I let that energy, like I release it and I say, we're not a good fit, I get all of that 1,000,000% of my energy back, and more clients can come in.
Right. And I suppose, you know, why do you think people don't do that? I mean, that's obviously coming from some form of state of fear, isn't it? It's the fear of losing out. So again, that can become their block in a way. I know we don't want to talk about blocks, but that could.
We can talk about blocks. I think that it's a block is the thing that prevents you from moving forward.
Yeah.
Block prevents you from moving forward. A story, like, you can walk forward with a story, right? I have a money block because I don't know, kick out a reason. Why do people have money blocks?
Because they were told that money doesn't grow on trees by their dad when they were a child.
Okay. Cool. So I have a money block because my dad said money doesn't grow on trees, and he worked 80 hours a week, and I never saw my dad. And every time I asked him to come to the school play, he reminded me that money doesn't grow on trees. So for me, if money comes easily and I'm able to go to my kids' school play, it means I'm like dishonoring how difficult it was for my father, right? Or I'm going to go replicate that same thing, and I'm going to think it's normal to work 80 hours a week. And so I'm going to go seek out a job for, you know, £30 a year, 30,000, right? Versus I'm going to feel comfortable and confident walking into a job and saying, actually, this starting salary doesn't work for me. I'd really like to work for you, but this is the price tag, right? And so if you believe money doesn't grow on trees, you're going to go get that lower paying job because your nervous system is more comfortable. It feels more like sweatpants because you've been wearing it so long, yeah. Right? So you go and replicate that pattern because it's comfortable to your nervous system and to your neural circuitry, right? Yeah. So instead of saying, this is a block because of this, and I have to get over it because I can't have money. If you can just simply say, this is the way I was raised, and this happened a lot in my childhood. But also, there were a lot of times where there was always enough money because I never had to not go to the doctor, right? I never didn't get to go to McDonald's for a birthday party. You know, it was $4. So I got to go. Maybe I didn't go to the pizza party, but I went to the McDonald's birthday party. I always had shoes to wear. I always had clothes on my feet. I always had the textbooks I needed. I always felt confident asking my mom if I could go get ice cream from the ice cream truck, right, for $1. I had available money for the things that I love. And it feels very safe for me to have available money for the things that I love. And I actually grew up with quite a few people who made nice money, and none of them were assholes. And so if I'm choosing to believe that people that make money are assholes, I'm disregarding that information that I gathered. So I think when we soften these things and say, I'm open to seeing evidence that refutes this belief.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And we start there. So when I was first really dealing with my relationship with money, my story was single moms deserve to struggle because my mom really worked her tail off to make it possible for me and my sister to have a good life. And I just finished my PhD. I was working at a law firm. I was also teaching at two different elite universities. I had every reason to be able to be making significant money. And I shouldn't say that. I was making significant money. And I was setting up my life in such a way that I would have economic stability, instability at every single turn. I was shooting myself in the foot because it felt very emotionally unsafe to say, I'm just gonna rock it now. I'm just ready to fucking blow it up because now I'm a doctor and I'm ready to help people and I'm excited and I like my jobs and I like the students I'm working with and I'm just like let's go. Instead of if I allow myself to have the things I really want, that's a fuck you to how difficult my mom had it. I don't want her to feel like the way that she, the things that she struggled to do and the things that she sacrificed for and the things that she really made sure happened for us, that she didn't have to do that, that it was in vain in some way, right? And so I had to really heal my relationship with the belief that I was allowed to have what I want and also still honor how difficult my mom had worked, right?
Right.
And those weren't blocks, they were stories.
Yeah, but subconscious. Because, some of those things I would have thought, just as a, outsider looking in, that a lot of people might not even know, that even understand that on us, because obviously we none of us have that really conscious, this is a subconscious thing. This is an automatic response that we obviously don't, well, nobody wants that. So how did that go from being unconscious to conscious so that you could face it and do whatever you needed to do to heal it or however you work with it? How do you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I don't know that I healed it. I carry it more gently.
Right? Okay.
It felt like a backpack filled with rocks. And now it's a cute little rose quartz.
Right. So you're just sort of almost just accepting, that's why that is. And so you're just being a little bit softer on yourself, being a little bit kinder to yourself, that it's okay. This is why I'm not putting my mum down if I react this way. She was doing the best that she could do with the information that she had at that time. That kind of conversation, is that where...
Yeah, I think translating it to gratitude, right?
It's just switched. So really you've just flipped it.
Exactly.
And just being a little bit, because we can all be so harsh on ourselves, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the bigger thing than just carrying it more gently, being more kind, having gratitude, I think the bigger thing was having someone tell me, a coach tell me, you can have this feeling, story, belief, neural circuitry, that can exist and you can make a shit ton of money, right? Yeah. And the reason I don't like the word blocks is because it sets up this narrative that says you're blocked from having the money because you have the belief system.
Yeah, it's you've got to give up that for that, and that's not...
But I think here's the thing that I want to kind of underline, and it's insidious, and I don't think it's on purpose. That belief that it's a block and that you can't have it until you do this, that belief, that story, that cultural inculcation, that makes a lot of money for a lot of people in the spiritual coaching community.
Right.
It does.
Because it's all about... They're all talking about releasing these blocks, and right, so that seems to be, and it's funny, isn't it? It obviously goes in sort of fits, and I'm hearing about it a lot, shall I say? So I suppose it goes in these the ways that before it was all so much about thoughts, how we think affects what we do, blah blah blah. Now it's sort of moved, gone a bit deeper into the again, it's all about the healing and releasing these blocks. It's funny how it sort of goes. I mean, everybody's doing it to because they want to help, but
absolutely. This is not me being we're all a bunch of douchebags and this is happening, but I think
just got to be a bit careful.
Yeah, it's really disempowering, right?
Yeah.
When we put out...
We're not wrong, Liz. We're not broken. We don't need fixing. There, we just need to maybe look at things from it. And sometimes we need somebody to guide us through that, because we can go through life so one-track mind because we're seeing things our way. Sometimes all it takes is somebody to say, you know, have you looked at it this way? Ah.
Yeah. So you spoke about kind of what was the path, and I can point out four specific things that got me to a place where I was like, oh, I don't need to make this a thing, right? It's still a thing, but I don't need to make it a thing that means I can't have money, joy, happiness, a nice house, blah, 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 right? Okay. So there were four things. One, I went to a business conference and it was presented to me, like the keynote speaks to, it was so rich. It was so beautiful. It was so lovely. And there was a business speaker named Ed Milet, who, if you don't know Ed Milet, go look at the Ed Milet show. It's so good. But he gave a speech in which he talked about creating a beautiful life and letting yourself really go for this. And he was talking about his son and something about like being on a golf trip or something. And my soul just kind of clicked into understanding that if I want my son to be happy, right? I want my kid to have a happy life. I want him to be a happy person. But kids don't do what we say. Wouldn't that be great? Right? They model what we do. And it clicked in my body for the first time that if I'm going to give my son the resources to be able to be happy throughout his life, I have to be happy. And not like fake happy, but like genuinely like embodying gratitude and just like joy and open-heartedness. And so I'm listening to this thing. I'm in a stadium of 6,200 other entrepreneurs, right? 6,000 other people. And I am sobbing, not like tearing up because this is so meaningful. I am ugly crying, surrounded by 6,000 people, and just like heaving sobs. And I think it clicked in my body at that moment, right? It had gone from being something conceptual of like, I want my son to be happy and like, I'm doing a good job and I'm, you know, extracurriculars and like, he goes to a good school and like, he's having such a great childhood, right? To, oh, fucking shit. Like, there is a huge gap between how I want my son to feel about himself and his life and how I feel about myself and my life. And if I want to close, if I want him to have what I want him to have, I have to close this gap. And so that was November 2019. So I started really to shift. And one of the women, you know, that the universe brought into my life at that conference said, you have to go read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And I was like, okie dokie. And so I started to listen to that book because I can't actually read it. It's just like spiritual gobbledygook. But I can let it wash over.
Audible,
right? Audible saves my life often. So listening to The Power of Now, and I'm in recovery from drugs and alcohol. And my one of my fellows said to me, go do Lacey Phillips' work, which is deep subconscious hypnosis work. So her website is just tobemagnetic.com, tobemagnetic.com. And she has tons of workshops that move you through neural reprogramming. If you go to the website, I would suggest signing up for the Pathway, which is her monthly subscription, versus buying the courses, because the courses are quite expensive and the subscription's about $30 a month. And I just started doing the workshops. I did the inner child workshop. I did the shadow workshop. I ended a relationship. So I guess there's five things. So the first is I went to this conference and was surrounded by other people who were building businesses. And the conference was grounded in not just strategy, but like deep mindset work. So that was number one. Number two was reading, listening to The Power of Now. Number three was starting Lacey Phillips' work and doing especially the workshops, Shadow Workshop and Inner Child. And then three was I left a douchebag relationship. I was seeing someone quite seriously for 2 years, and he did a bunch of shady shit and then some other shady shit. And I just prayed to the universe. I said, you know, if this is supposed to end, just make it real clear, right? And I'd already drawn boundaries around you're doing shady shit. and I said, if it happens again, this is like sayonara, sucker. And so he did like really shady shit. And I just drew a boundary. And I was so in love with him. So in love with him. But I chose me, right? And so there was an energetic up-leveling in that moment that was pretty significant. And then the final thing that I did, right? So I've now gone to this conference and had my body accept that I need to become happy. Live the life that I'm supposed to live, actually, is how I would put that. I'm supposed to live the life I'm supposed to live, and I'm not living it right now. Eckhart Tolle, Power of Now, Lacey Phillips, drew a boundary and said, the kind of love that I'm worthy of is more than what you're able
right.
to give me. So, bye. Yeah. and then the final thing I did, I started praying to the universe. I was just like, send me a mentor. Like, I know I need someone to bring this all together for me. I'm ready to expand. I'm ready to live bigger. I kept having these dreams every single night that was like, just live bigger, like live bigger. Like every single night it was just live bigger. And I'd written it in lipstick on my mirror in my bedroom, like live bigger. And I was just like, that was just like, am I living big in this moment? And if the answer is no, and I'm playing small, like, how do I change that? So the pandemic starts. I've been praying for a mentor. I have felt like I'm on an energetic precipice to go into the next thing, like this next iteration. I felt very much like I was on the cliff and I had this, like, I think I said it felt like sitting on like a rocket ship that had like those big gas tanks, right? Like with the shuttles, when the shuttles go into space, they have those like huge gas fuselages, right? And I was like, I'm just like, I'm sitting on a rocket ship. I'm like, I know. And so at the beginning of the pandemic, Lacey Phillips had a Facebook group at the time. And somebody in the group just like jumped on and said, hey, if you're a woman, let's just get in the Zoom call, right? And this was like 2 days into the lockdown, right? And so from all over the world, all these women, there were probably 10 of us, 15, all these women just showed up in a Zoom room, and only two of us knew each other from the start. This was whole new, just like people that had saw this post. And so now I'm surrounded by spiritually minded women who are into manifestation, who are very smart, who consider themselves coaches, healers, consultants, things like that. And now we are hanging out, and we hung out every single night for like 2 weeks in a row, just for hours, just being like, how are you guys doing? Like, how are you holding up? But on that first call, someone said, Paloma Love, she's a high ticket sales coach. Paloma said, I'm going to butcher this, but she said, people are either wet blankets or kindling. And you have to surround yourself with kindling if you wanna go where you wanna go, if you wanna get bigger. And I DM'd her, she'd said one sentence. I DM'd her and I said, I'm supposed to work with you. Can we get in a Zoom room, just us? And so we did. And she articulated beautifully the gaps that she saw between where I wanted to be and where I was now. And I'd laid it all out, and she was like, I see this, I see this, I see this, I see this. This is how we address it. Do you want to work together? And it was beautiful. And then she said, and it's $10,000 for 1 month. And I was like, oh Jesus. But I I knew it in my knower, as one of my friends said, I knew it in my knower that I was supposed to work with this person and that my time was now. And so I got a kitchen napkin and a red Sharpie from my like junk drawer. And I opened all of the tabs on my credit cards. And I said, I have $10,000 of available credit.
Wow.
Let's fucking go. And we did. And I made that money back in 60 days.
Wow. So yeah. You were ready.
I was ready. I'd been pregnant with this energy and this readiness, right? And I just needed a midwife to be like, all right, let's go. No. Right. And she was that midwife and like birthed this. Right. And so within the year of doing that from March 2020 until March 2021, I had gotten 11 times ROI on that investment. And as of now in my company, it's quite a bit more.
Well, when you're ready, the teacher will appear. And that's exactly, you've just explained there the journey that you went on, and it, you know, to me that sounded like you were releasing a lot emotionally with your you know, all this stuff that somehow was sort of holding you back in different ways, to when clearing all those, to then as if by magic, but it wasn't, it's because you did the work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nothing about it was magic. It was, you know, it was climbing stairs.
Yeah. Right? And but it seems to. So from an outside, so I'm sure to your friends, they're like, oh, well, what happened? Oh, and I'm sure they probably said, oh, you're so lucky.
No, you know, it's interesting because I became very vocal about what I was doing, right? I became public about what I was doing. I started a podcast. Which if you're on Apple, it's called Small No More. And that was really my thing, was I'm going to live bigger and I'm going to be small no more. And that became kind of my internal rallying cry, was I'm going to be small no more. So what happened was not, you're so lucky. What happened was, with friends that have known me for years and years, even decades, started to get worried because I was being very public about the choices that I was making. I was being very public about being a spiritual entrepreneur. I was being very public about the fact that I left my job June 5th, 2020. So I hired Paloma in March, hired a second coach in May, hired that second coach saying, I want to leave my job within 3 years. And she laughed. And so, she's from New Zealand. She's like, 3 years? What, 3 years? And the law firm I was working with at the time, I just love, they're such beautiful humans, run by one of a really dear old friend of mine. But the requirements of the law firm were incongruent with what my son needed during a pandemic. And I'd really been struggling, crying, you know, trying to make it work. And when my second coach said like 3 years, we like shifted a bunch of stories, and I quit 3 days later.
Oh, 3 years to 3 days. Love that.
Right. And within a year had made six figures, right? Because I just decided this is fucking happening, right? So I quit my job June 5th. January, so 6 months later, I had a $50,000 sales month, $34,000 cash. And so for you who are listening that are newbie entrepreneurs, like, don't let somebody talk you out of the idea that this is crazy, right? Or don't let someone tell you it's crazy, right? It's possible. And, you know, just like last week, I made in 36 hours, what, you know, in cash, not sales, in 36 hours, I made what I used to make in 3 months at my stable job.
It's just proof. You're just proof there that it's all doable. And where you had created this story, okay, I want to leave in 3 years, and your coach, lover, Yeah, has gone from, you know, really what had changed in your outside world? What had actually changed in the real reality of your life in that time? Nothing. Yeah. Apart from your
a lot, but I want to answer your question about, you know, your friends must have said you're so lucky. No, because I was being very public. I was talking about the income I was making because at the time I was really invested or kind of sold on the idea that the way that you attract clients is you tell other clients that how much your clients are making, right? I call it the Facebook circle jerk, where it's just like this new multi-level marketing where it's like, I had a 10K month. I can teach you how to have a 10K month. It drives me fucking crazy. But, you know, I mean, I dabble in it a little bit. I talk about my client outcomes a bit. But when I started being consistently out there about what I believed, about who I am, I was struggling with my sexuality at the time, and I came out of the closet as a lesbian, and then later had to walk it back and be like, turns out I'm still bisexual. So who would have known? Because I didn't. I for sure thought I was gay. But you know, I was living these things openly, right? And my friends were concerned, deeply concerned. And a lot of them said, I don't know who you are anymore. Because I wasn't who I'd been. I'm a very different person than I was in college. When I was deeply insecure, where I was really, unconfident about my weight. I felt unbeautiful. I don't know. I felt the opposite of beautiful. I felt like I was too loud. I felt like I was too much. And then in my marriage, it felt like my ex-husband's a great person, but I felt like the person that I had to be was much smaller.
Right.
And that's not a criticism of him. It's to say the dynamic was such that I didn't feel like I could be all of myself. So who I am with my full wingspan, as my coach Paloma would say, my whole beautiful fucking wingspan as the, you know, unique weird bird that I am. That wingspan's a lot bigger than the bird that I'd been trying to be for a long time. And so my friend group has significantly changed, significantly. I left a 12-step program that I had been in for food, in which I had lost 100 pounds in my 20s, left that program really deprogrammed, literally, from a lot of the toxic beliefs that I had picked up in there, which were reinforcing the body dysmorphia that I already had. I took 4 years off from that program. I'm back now, and I'm grateful for that. I gained all my weight back. And in this body, I'm more than 250 pounds at the moment. In this body, I feel beautiful and whole and sexy and voluptuous. And, you know, I have yet to run into a suitor that's not like, oh my God, fuck. You know, like I'm profoundly confident in who I am. And I think that my friends are very happy for me. But that doesn't mean that they know me.
No. Right. So you, what an inspiration. What an inspiration for any woman out there who is maybe caught up in that trap of living in a very small way. And if you're thinking that it's time to maybe expand your wings. So for the listeners, and then we've only got a couple of minutes left. It's been wonderful speaking to you. How did they get in contact with you? If they're not watching it on YouTube or on the blog, they'll have all your links below. But just to the listeners on the show or the podcast, how do they contact you?
Yeah, let me pop a block for you guys. You can have an international six-figure company and still not have figured out how to have your own domain name for your email. So... possible. People don't think you're less professional. Turns out they don't give a shit.
No.
So the easiest way is to send me an email. It's just Dr. Dr. Liz, L-I-Z. My last name, Dubois, D-U-B-O-I-S. So just drlizdubois@gmail.com. One day, maybe I'll figure out domains. That's not today. So shoot me an email, drlizdubois@gmail.com. You can go to my website, which is souldrliz, all one word, souldrliz.com. Or you can DM me on Facebook, which is my very favorite way to meet people. So on Facebook, just look for Elizabeth Degi, D-E-G-I. Dubois, D-U-B-O-I-S. That's Elizabeth Degi Dubois. And shoot me a DM. Most of my content goes out on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram a couple times a day. And maybe one day I'll update my website because right now it kind of sucks.
But isn't it? Isn't that funny? It's not those important things. It's about getting the results for your clients. So
Yeah, so that's maybe the note that I want to end on. You know, if your listenership is really entrepreneurs, you can do this messy. Yeah. The things that you need are a calendar link. I use Acuity. Calendly is another option. You need a way for people to pay you. I like MoonClerk. MoonClerk is a reoccurring payment software. I really like it. It integrates with Stripe. So that's the third thing you need. You need scheduling, you need MoonClerk, you need Stripe, you need a business bank account. And then the last thing you need, in my humble opinion, is you need the profit first accounting model. So if you just Google profit first model, you will see what that is. It makes it very easy for you to keep your taxes and your expenses and your personal owner's compensation separate so that at the end of the year, you are not fucked up the ass with taxes.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Liz. Wonderful speaking to you. And to the listeners, I will be back next week with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.